Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost Hour Culture, Current Events, Hour Catholic Faith. We do that every afternoon for 50 minutes here on the show. And Tuesdays, typically joined by Father Thomas Loya. I think I remember him saying that he wouldn't be with us this week. So I hope I'm remembering that correctly. Usually I get an update of what we're talking about. I haven't seen that. So we do have a lot of things to talk about. And we're going to get into some of these topics, like apparently what the bishops are saying now, according to Crux Now, the reaction to the Obama administration's mandate on public schools or any school getting public funding. We'll be talking about that. Also, this interesting story about Pascal's wager, which is something that I've used effectively. And the question is it really effective? Well, we'll get into that. We'll talk about that. And this as well. Will Europe's third largest church punish pastor for multiple affairs is the question. And this minister apparently has not only admitted to the affairs, but essentially says that sexual sin will not take you to hell. Hey, come on. There's certain things that I guess you can just decide are okay, and he seems to have made his decision. We'll talk about all of that and more this afternoon. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith for 50 minutes every afternoon. Typically, Father Thomas Loya joins us on Tuesday. He is out this week. TaborLife.org, however, his website with his blog posts, his videos, many things that he shares when it comes to theology of the body. Easy for me to say. Theology of the body and what that's all about. And especially the debate that just continues with issues of this nature, gender neutrality, all of this, especially important as Catholics to understand just what all of this is about and why is it important? Why does it matter? And why should we be concerned? While at the same time realizing there may be some degree of caveat that could be, and I think that most anyone would say, there's a way that this could work, kind of like the whole HHS mandate and the Affordable Care Act. I think many of us said, there's a way that this can work. We could all have this making sense without it seeming to be some sort of sweeping and just uncompromising reform. So we'll talk about that. Posted this over on my Leo C. Brown Facebook page, if you care to follow me over there. Funny stuff, because I was one time before re-embracing Christianity, reverting, as I say, to my Christian faith as I did as a an older 20-something in my mid to late 20s. In my early 20s, I was all over the map trying to find a place that I could call my spiritual home. And one of those areas I kind of drifted into was into Buddhism and Eastern philosophies, Taoism especially, but very fascinated by this whole concept of kind of emptying into the universe as one sort of connected thing. And so part of that practice, I thought, was vegetarianism. And for about 6 years, I dabbled between being totally vegan, no animal products whatsoever, to still pretty strict vegetarianism, and I was kind of back and forth through that time. Little did I know, during this time, I had celiac disease, and it was the worst diet I could possibly ever had because I was just eating breads and grains and, you know, a bunch of stuff that was making my health a lot worse. But little did I know, it was just my choice as a believer, I guess, of something. But what I do know is that vegetarians typically are pretty obnoxious and can be almost evangelistic in nature, right? They just want to promote this lifestyle to others, almost militantly. So, and the funny little video is a guy that's eating meat, and what if meat eaters basically shared this sort of militant desire to share this diet and lifestyle with everyone. That's what the whole thing's about. It's pretty funny stuff. So this was interesting. Christianity Today is the website talking about this megachurch pastor who apparently has admitted to his improprieties when it comes to liaisons with certain parishioners or congregants in his church, and he is with the Embassy of the Blessed Kingdom of God for all nations in the Ukrainian capital of Kiev. He is the Nigerian pastor, and he apparently posted a video on his blog titled "Sexual Sin is Not Enough to Take You to Hell." I'm sorry. It's hard for me to get that out of my mouth without chuckling. But apparently, he has now admitted to having these affairs and trying to justify it by saying, hey, you know, it's not so bad. There are worse things that one could do. And I think that's kind of a gospel of wishful thinking, no doubt. There are those who kind of fall into that, well, I've never killed anybody sort of mentality, and therefore they think, well, you know, what's so bad? We are consensual adults doing what we do, and come on, this can't be that sinful. Which, again, is why we talk about theology of the body, as we do on Tuesday afternoons, generally, typically with Father Thomas Loya. But this is why we've got to understand this. And when we understand it, for me, it was this, the scales falling away, right? It was the vision of clarity of getting this was, I think I've shared this before, two of the most beautiful realities for me as a convert to Catholicism. One was the understanding of redemptive suffering, right? Just embracing that, getting that, figuring it out, made so much beautiful, amazing sense, even in the midst of pain. And don't we all need that? Don't we all need that? So for me, that was a beautiful realization coming into the Catholic faith. The second was really understanding the gift of sexuality and the dynamic that is there within the range of what is exaltive of the gift that God has given us and what is insulting to that gift or somehow degrades this gift, and getting a clear vision of that. Wow, right? I mean, it's amazing. Now, not that either of these areas are easy, because we're human beings, and like it or not, we're weak and we're tempted, and we will justify anything for our selfish desires. As I heard Mike Allen talking about this morning, the first reading today from Mass, which I sat in adoration, I always read the readings of the day there, and was reminded of why we have the turmoil, right? This is what James is referring to in his epistle. The challenges that we have come from within. They come from these desires that we try to justify, these passions, that we simply say, well, right, I wouldn't feel this way if God didn't want me to, whatever, crazy, right? We just justify stuff in the craziest of all crazy ways, and it leads us down a destructive path. That happens. So to try to justify something that you've done by basically saying, well, yeah, come on. There are a lot worse things we could do. That's obviously being very irresponsible when it comes to living your faith and presenting this witness. And, you know, it's one thing to have temptation, as we all do. It's one thing to even fall into sin, as we all do. But it's quite a different path to take to say, I'm tempted, I'm sinful, I know I do stupid stuff, therefore I'm going to seek reconciliation, and I'm going to get this squared away. I'm going to work this out some way, somehow, through the grace of God, through the sacramental reality that is there in the grace, the sacramental grace that is afforded to me. That's one path that we all should take. But if we step out in this crazy world, I'm sorry, of trying to justify things by saying, well, it's not so bad, right? Now we got a problem. And Jesus is pretty clear about this, because what does that do? It simply says, well, if so-and-so says it's not so bad, if my pastor, who is having multiple affairs, says it's not so bad, well, then it must be not so bad. Therefore, I can do this as well. And Jesus says, for those who would lead others to sin, which gospel account, forgive me, get my words correct, it happens to be in, because there are several that mention this. We hear it as a millstone around the neck, or better that they're not been born. Basically, it's pretty bad news if that's what we're going to do. If we're going to lead people down a path because we're justifying our own behavior by saying it's okay, and therefore other people see our witness and follow suit because we have put ourselves in some position of authority, we got some problems, right? And we got to realize just how challenging that can be. So, bizarre, unfortunate, we pray for him, no doubt, but I think we've got to be very clear that, you know, there's a big difference between the temptation and even the sin, right? Even falling into sin and seeking reconciliation, which we've seen. I mean, my goodness, how many times have pastors in these positions of authority been discredited many times because of things of this nature, behavior of this nature, but some of them have sought reconciliation. Some of them have come back to active ministry because they were contrite and it was honest. And it seemed like, well, you know, the lesson has been learned. So again, prayers for this guy. We'll see where it leads. I posted this over on my Facebook page. I think I retweeted it, actually, and, you know, when I retweet, it shows up. So I don't have the whole story here, and I believe it, based on what I'm seeing, it's a German protest, but don't hold me to that. I'm just looking at the language in the background. But basically, a young woman, girl, flashing the peace sign, wearing the headscarf in front of protesters who are protesting Muslim presence altogether, from what I understand, and Mike.com giving her props for doing something of this nature, which ties in, interestingly, to what our Holy Father, Pope Francis, had to say recently when it comes to allowing conscience protection for those who, like Muslims, wish to be able to do this. We'll talk about that when we come back. More to come. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Follow me over on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. You'll find me there, and I will post the things we talk about. Many things we don't necessarily get the chance to talk about, but I'll do my best, especially those things that I see get traction. You're welcome to comment on the stories there, and sometimes I'll even enter into discussions and try not to debate. I try not to debate. I try to be, well, I think I'm always respectful of opinions, even if they differ than mine. And I think if you know me, I do this. I try to find the value even in those opinions that do differ. I'm not going to shut someone down and simply say, that's crazy, or how dare you think that way, or what kind of, where did this come from? I try not to. Maybe I do. If I've done that in the past, mea culpa. I apologize. But I do think this is crazy, and it's not a post. It's not a response to, excuse me, it's not a, what am I trying to say? It's not something that was said in reaction to a post. I think what happened is frankly crazy on a number of levels. And that is the story everybody's been talking about. What was it? Yellowstone, where this happened. It was in one of the major national parks. A bison, a baby bison, is found. Apparently, a father and his son decide they're gonna rescue this bison that seems to be alone. Maybe it was separated, and they're going to take it. Which apparently there was some sort of maybe a bison ranch or something of this nature, which is an interesting place. Let's take it where it'll be killed for meat. That's a good thought right there. But which, by the way, bison is some of the best meat. I think we'd all agree, those of us who eat and enjoy meat. As I was talking about my crazy radical veganism earlier, there's nothing quite like a buffalo steak. But the bison apparently was they tried to reintroduce it to the herd. The herd rejected it. The mother rejected it. So therefore, it has to be euthanized. So that this is the logical trajectory of all of this. Okay, so first, it's a little bit not cool for the father and son, even though it was a compassionate sort of desire to see this creature cared for them to remove it from its natural habitat, that was a mistake in the first place. But it ends up being euthanized, ultimately, and I'm not sure it was for bison veal, if that's a thing. Anyway, but as my brother-in-law, who commented on this, and I remember this, he said this bison did not have to be euthanized because you could nurse it. You could nurse it into maturity and farm raise it. If that's what you're going to do, you could raise it on a farm. And as a cattle farmer that he is, he knows this stuff. And I remember this as a kid, bottle feeding calves. I recall it happening. So I know that you could train a calf, even if the mother is not going to take care of it, to be bottle fed. You could do that. You could nurse this creature back. But it seems to be almost, this is, there's something liberating, I guess, something exhilarating, maybe, from some when it comes to the pathway to euthanasia. Whether it's animals, whether it's humans, whether it's euthanizing the unborn in the womb or the infirmed and the elderly when they are no longer productive or can't function according to what we want, then, well, there's the path. Which, if we really want to make a difference and we want to do something, it could be done. There could be a different way of doing this. And we could take what was maybe not the smartest decision in the beginning of capturing this creature, but still not having it end up as it is. And my question is, if it wasn't euthanized, would we be talking about it right now? Maybe. Or maybe there'd be a cute little calf in the bison zoo, or perhaps farm, right? Which I think if it's a bison farm, we know where those guys are going. To Tasty Grill. That's where it's going. Absolutely. Anyway, So I mentioned this a moment ago. The protests that seem to be taking place, and we talk to the Muslim Public Affairs Council on a monthly basis because it's darn important for us to understand what we're dealing with here. And I put this over, it was a Christian Science Monitor piece that talks about terrorism and how unlikely, how just amazingly low the stats are when it comes to the violence. First off, the decreasing violence in the U.S. since the 1980s, it's sharply declined. And then when you look at the terroristic potential of someone actually being caught in something of that nature domestically, 1 in 3.5 million odds, something of that nature since 1970. I can't recall the exact stats, but it's there in this piece on my Facebook page if you want to see it. But yet we are so ridiculously concerned about the Muslim community that, and I want to say this, I'm guessing, again, just from the photos of this thing I put over there from Mike.com, I haven't researched it well enough to know, but it appeared to be from Germany, but it doesn't matter. We know there's anti-Muslim sentiment. We know there's anti-Muslim sentiment from the front runner on the GOP ticket. We know, well, I was a front runner. I guess he's the nominee now, right? Donald Trump, presumptive nominee. I think we've got to say presumptive nominee because we still don't know what shenanigans may take place. Anything could happen. Something crazy could occur. And who knows? There seems to be kind of a cooling of the jets on the GOP, traditional GOP foundation that would oppose Trump and has pledged this Stop Trump campaign. But at this point, we don't know. Presumptive nominee. We know there's anti-Muslim sentiment, and we know that that is stirred into action, unfortunately, and that there are those who do have a fear of this community simply because they're who they are, and we don't understand them. And because of that, we have to hate them. Which if we dig back just a little bit in our own history of this United States, we'll find very similar treatment to Catholics. And I think that this is something we have to understand, that we've been down this road, right? My goodness, go in and look at the history of, in Europe, especially in England, the anti-Catholic sentiment upon the Reformation and the foundation of the Church of England, we know the stories. So I would hope that we would have some degree of empathy, of proaction when it comes to looking at this community that may be suffering in a very similar way and say, what can we do? What can we do? Because we know this path. So it's interesting as we look at this article, this is America Magazine talking about the LaCroix interview from Pope Francis. LaCroix is a Catholic publication in France. And it basically, he says, if a Muslim woman wishes to wear a veil, she must be able to do so. Similarly, if a Catholic wishes to wear a cross, he must be allowed to do so. People must be free to profess their faith in the heart of their own culture, not at its margins. And I've said many times, I will defend religious liberty for any religion, for the sake of religion, for those of us who want to practice our faith, for those of us who want to express what we believe, where we believe it, when we believe it, we should be allowed to do so. So what if we were banned? Oh, I'm sorry. As I say this, I got to remember, Catholics don't do this. But I thought, what if we were banned from making the sign of the cross in public? And then I stopped myself in mid-thought, right? I was thinking, oh, this would be a big thing, but my, you know, what do you do? What Catholic is bold enough to sit down in a public restaurant and make the sign of the cross? However, I've shared this before. There was a time traveling to see our family in Miami. We stop off in around the Gainesville Lake City, I think is where it was, area at a Sonny's Barbecue, which is one of my favorite stops for road trips. And we're there, and we make the sign of the cross, and my wife comments because, well, as we always do, we do this at every meal. We pray before our meal, make the sign of the cross. And this gentleman who was at a table near us, who was somewhat obnoxious and loud, My wife asked, "You think that guy's drunk?" And I said, "No, he's that's how he's a Florida cracker, right? He's of this area, and they kind of have a very interesting dialect." She thought he was kind of slurring and being, she just thought he might be intoxicated. The gentleman makes a point to come to our table on his way out. And he says, "I just want you to know that I just really appreciate what you did there," right? So he appreciated the fact that he saw us pray publicly before a meal. So what if we weren't allowed to do that, right? What if there was some sort of, no, this is a neutral zone. And I think that that's what our Holy Father is beginning to get concerned about, because it kind of seems like we're in this world of neutrality of everything, that everything has got to be, you know, and I realize we've got to protect the minorities. Those who don't think like us have got to be allowed to think and express themselves. But what are we doing, and where's the detriment here? We've got to make sure that there's a balance. I think we've got a big overcorrection that's kind of happening. We'll talk about that more in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. That's what we do for 50 minutes every afternoon. Almost an hour, but not quite. Thank you for joining us. Follow me over on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. You'll see the interesting things that we discuss over there. Like this from Christianity Today, the question about Pascal's wager, which 17th century mathematician, inventor, physicist, all-around smart guy, and Catholic, Blaise Pascal, has the question regarding, if you believe what you believe, to a non-believer, right? If you believe that, and in the end, you're right, what have I lost, right? What have I lost? I've lived a moral life, as far as I can assume. I've tried to be on the up and up. I've tried to have a clean conscience about the things that I do based on what I believe. But if the end is true that there's nothing, so be it. However, if you think about me being right and you being wrong, maybe that's something to think about. And essentially revisiting this, because this had criticism that that's not the way to, there's more to faith than that, and why would we start with this kind of fear-based pragmatic view, as some have said about this. And this, of course, is not how you base your faith. You don't build your faith upon this. You may have a moment of thought and clarity that says, wait a minute, and then because of that, a prayer life is born, a faith life is nurtured, and then the path looks very different. So it's an interesting look at this, but basically coming to the conclusion that it's still valid. It is still valid. And what I've personally found is that there have been times, what happened after the fact, I have no idea, right? What happened after that could have been anything. But I know I've used this. I've used this very method, and not to say, do you know anything about Pascal's wager? Yeah, nothing of that nature. I just simply ask this question when I found it appropriate. And when I remember, and it's been more than a few times that I've done this, but one I remember very vividly was a time I was doing an event, and I, at many events as a mobile DJ and doing things like that. And so I was going through this guard shack area to get into the event space. And so I got in, I unloaded, and I had to leave. Like, I couldn't leave the vehicle there. So I had to go back out of the guard shack and then go back out. So I'm going at the end of the night, going back to get my van. And as I'm going, I pass the guard shack, and the gentleman who kind of waved me through was still there. And he's got, I can see in to his computer. And as I catch a glance of what this guy's looking at, I'm like, wow, right? And some way, somehow, we ended up on my way back through just kind of starting a conversation. And I thought, you know, I'm going to throw it out there. So I used the Pascal's wager on the guy in the guard shack, right? Just, I thought it'd be an appropriate opportunity. And based on his reaction that I could see a physical response to what I was saying. And I think it struck up, the conversation struck up because the van that I drive has the what if it is true question, and he asked about that. So I'm like, okay, well, here we go, right? you're going to ask me. The door is wide open. You just kicked it open. Thank you very much. Let's discuss this. So like I say, God willing, that was a seed that got planted. I don't know where things went from there, but, you know, it's worth using. It's been effective, no doubt. So Crux now is talking about the bishop's reaction to the transgender directive being deeply disturbing. John Allen Jr., from Crux Now, with the full article that I have posted, retweeted now at my Facebook page, so you can take a look at this. But as we've talked about, there's a way to do things right, and then a way to just kind of sweepingly change that ends up with all kinds of collateral damage and problems and issues. And as, again, people who believe in a theology of the body, that there's something about the way we're created that reveals truth about who God is because of the complementarity of man and woman, not discrediting that there are challenges at times based on gender dysphoria, based on the apparent gender at birth that can happen. There are a number of issues that have to be considered. But as you consider these, it does not mean that everything else is eradicated, or that the, you know, it's almost like we're going to clean off the desk by just sweeping our arms across and pushing everything onto the floor. There you go. It's clean now. Right? If that's what we're doing, well, then what about everything on the floor? What have we done? You may appear to have a clean surface, but you got a bigger mess of everything that you swept away. And it certainly seems like that's kind of where we're going with this, to simply say, okay, well, it's got to be this way. No other way. Nope. It's unfair to have a private bathroom facility. Really? Really? That's a problem? That's a problem. Because that singles someone out? Again, I've said many times, I'll use that. I'll wait in line for that. Thank you very much. I'm happy to do that. I don't care what it looks like. If someone is going to look at me and wonder, is this guy a man or a woman? I don't care. I'll wait in line for the private facility. Thank you. I'll use this one. No, you guys go in there. Yeah. Stand shoulder to shoulder at the trough. That's fine. I don't know. I don't want a part of that. I'll wait for this one. Why is that a problem? It's kind of like in the HHS mandate. Why could we not uphold the religious liberty of organizations that simply do not want to offer things that are against their faith? Which, if we would have begun there and made a simple provision, because there were already provisions, right? There were provisions made for some organizations. Why couldn't that be for everyone? Now we've got a playing field that looks a little more fair. But when we walk into something with the attitude of let's sweep it all the heck onto the floor to clean our surface and not worry about the mess that's stacked up there or what gets broken in the process, we're probably not making the wisest decision. And unfortunately, what we do also is we open the door for reaction that we may not want, that is going to end up probably worse in the long run than if this was never done to begin with, because of the retaliation that occurs from things of this nature. And I think we've all begun to see it. We see the Facebook videos out there and those who are making their opinions heard, and they're frustrated, they're upset. I mean, it paves the way. It paves the way for someone like Donald Trump, who can come in and make outlandish claims and be as disrespectful as the day is long and get all kinds of support because of that lack of political correctness that we've said, right? So I think we've got to kind of, you know, we're not policymakers. We're not the ones who are there deciding these things. But I think as a citizenry, we have to have a little bit of shrewdness about us and say, what, you know, how do we navigate this effectively? And hopefully, how do we put people in office who we trust can navigate effectively as well? Not sure, but it's always the knee jerks, right? It's those reactions. Oh, okay, well, let's just get this. Let's just take care of it, whatever. And I'm guilty of that, I know. Easy to do. We got to stop and go, wait a minute, what's the logical way of handling this? It reminds me in a very minor way of this story that I posted here on my Facebook page, Leo C. Brown. You can follow me over there. Newscaster doing the news apparently early morning. Not sure why she's wearing what she's wearing. She may have literally been up all night, because I know this, right? I did morning radio. I know what it's like. There are times you don't sleep. I did bar remotes. I was hired to do remotes in bars, which meant that I had to be out until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning and then go to work at 4 a.m. There are times you just think, you know what? I'll just go grab a bite to eat and go to work. And I'll just keep on keeping on. And you sleep when you can. So I've been in that position. I'm not saying that is her, but it does kind of look like she's wearing a cocktail dress and not something that you would report the news in. But nonetheless, complaint calls forced her to be given a sweater while she's given the news. Quick, throw this on before anybody else calls. Nothing really revealing, nothing that I would consider undignified, maybe inappropriate. You could say, is that the most appropriate attire? Sure. You could ask that question. I ask that question when I see newscasters all the time. Really, is that the most appropriate? That I've asked that question before. But is it such that in the middle of giving the weather report, you got to be thrown a sweater? Anyway, that's where we are. Overreactions, unfortunately. We're out of time. Thank you for listening. Follow me over here on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost hour. God bless you.